Montana tribal leaders say Indian Health Service is not providing needed health care. Good evening, I'm Corin Cates-Carney.
And I'm Conrad Scheid, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry looks at the impact of a Flathead abortion clinic being closed.
And in our feature interview, reporter Edwin O'Brien talks with Clark Fork River advocates about cleanup of the old Smurfit Stone Mill site. Tribal leaders say misdiagnosed illnesses, denied medical payments, and a shortage of trained personnel are undermining health care for Native Americans. Representatives of seven Montana and Wyoming tribes testified today before a U.S. Senate Indian Affairs Committee field hearing in Billings. They described an Indian Health Service compromised by bloated and uncooperative bureaucracy and unable to fulfill its duty to provide health care for the more than 2 million American Indians and Alaska Natives. Healthcare Service Acting Director Yvette Ribadeau said in response that changes are underway, but more money is needed. Committee Chairman and Montana Democratic Senator John Tester says he wants more emphasis put on patients and less on administrative oversight. Tester says the concerns aired in Montana are shared by tribes across the West.
And in other news from around the state, 35 union workers at Stillwater Mining Company have accepted buyouts as the mine seeks to cut production costs. Mike Gentry, international representative for United Steelworkers, tells the Billings Gazette that most of the 35 aren't old enough to retire and plan to look for other work. Stillwater Mining had hoped to get 50 workers to take the buyouts. Those accepting will receive 6 months severance pay and health benefits. Last month, the company laid off 48 salaried employees, including 35 in Montana. Stillwater has about 1,800 employees who extract and refine palladium and platinum. The metals are used to make electronics, jewelry, fuel cells, coins, and other products. Stillwater also operates a smelter and recycling facility. The company recently signed a 5-year deal to supply platinum and palladium to a British chemical company.
A for-rent sign hangs in front of what was the only medical office to provide abortions in the Flathead Valley. The office was broken into in early March and vandalized to the extent it may be unable to reopen. This prompted Montana Human Rights Network and NARAL Pro-Choice Montana to raise funds to help physician's assistant Susan Cahill, who runs the office, to cover the cost of the damage. Cahill told Flathead reporter Katrin Fry during a March interview that she received overwhelming amount of support, but she was unsure about reopening her office because the vandalism was so personal. Cahill says everything was smashed, including faces and family photos. If the Kalispell office permanently shuts its doors, Montana will have lost two abortion providers in less than 6 months, leaving two providers in the state.
Executive Director of NARAL Pro-Choice Montana, Maggie Moran, says currently Planned Parenthood offers abortion services in Helena and Billings and limited services in its Great Falls and Missoula offices. The Blue Mountain Clinic in Missoula also offers abortions. In October of 2013, a Livingston doctor's office providing abortions closed its doors, and if all families of Kalispell decides not to reopen, that will mean the state is down to two providers and five clinics total where abortions are available.
We don't really have a pipeline of providers willing to jump in and take over when someone else is closing their practice or when they are forced to close outside of, you know, their own volition. There is no pipeline, really, for other providers to jump in and step up to the plate for very obvious reasons. It's a dangerous and very, very difficult job.
Moran says this region of the country is referred to as an abortion desert.
You know, a lot of the states that surround us only have one provider. So four providers is quite an oasis in perspective.
Physician's assistant Susan Cahill was running All Families Health Care as a primary care medical office in Kalispell, which also offered abortions. The office was broken into and vandalized in early March, shortly after it had moved into a new location. It has not reopened. Cahill's office was one of a string of abortion clinics attacked by an arsonist in the 1990s. The office was damaged at that time, but reopened. Cahill is also one of three people featured in a film called On Hostile Ground, which came out in 2001. Friday the 30th, Pro-Choice Montana and the Montana Human Rights Network are hosting a screening of this film in Kalispell.
We really wanted to take some time, and we feel that now is a good moment for people to reflect on what happened and to also give a space for Susan to really tell her side of the story and start looking to the future.
Moran says the film looks at some of the challenges facing medical professionals offering abortions as of 2001. She says they'll be talking about what's changed in 13 years and what's stayed the same. Moran says Montana currently has a buffer zone law that requires protesters at abortion clinics to be at least 20 feet away. She says a similar law is being challenged in Massachusetts.
So I think there's the general feeling that this violence is something in the past and that maybe we don't need laws like these buffer zones anymore. Maybe we've gotten to a better place that's less violent and less intimidating. But then we have such a poignant example that really is just so fresh in everyone's minds here in Montana.
The Friday event at the museum at Central School begins with a reception that is also a fundraiser for Pro-Choice Montana and the Montana Human Rights Network. The film itself starts at 6:15 and is free. Katrine Fry reporting from the Flathead.
The former general manager of Montana Expo Park in Great Falls has filed a lawsuit seeking her job back, arguing that Cascade County commissioners violated open meeting laws and their own policies in firing her. The Great Falls Tribune reports Lisa Braco's complaint was filed Friday. It alleges that county commissioners met twice without providing her or the public notice of their meetings, depriving her of an opportunity to respond to allegations. Braco's lawsuit alleges commissioners met sometime before April 30th, after which a due process letter was sent to Braco. Commissioners met again on May 19th, after which they decided to terminate Braco. Officials have not said why, but Great Falls police were asked to investigate financial matters at the events and entertainment venue in Great Falls.
Paul Tuss of Havre has been elected the chairman of the State Board of Regents, which oversees the Montana University System. Tuss has served as the interim chair since Governor Steve Bullock appointed former chairwoman Angela McLean as lieutenant governor. The Havre Daily News reports Tuss was elected Friday during the region's meeting in Havre. Tuss is the executive director of Bear Paw Development Corp. His term of the board expires in February 2020.
Missoula CPA Don Davies is one of three Democrats running in next week's primary for a seat on the Missoula County Commission. He says he wants to make the county more business-friendly.
We do have a lot of trained, good people in town. We've got infrastructure. And so I think it's more a matter of looking at our policies and our tax policies and try to sort out what's the problem here and figure out. Because we really need to get job growth going so that our folks have good paying wages.
Davies disagrees with the current county commission's decision to allocate $50,000 for the county attorney to sue the Federal Department of Justice over the DOJ's investigation of how the county attorney's office has handled sexual assault cases.
I do believe that they probably could have used negotiation rather than suing. I think there's a real issue on whether or not the chain of command was followed between the county attorney's state attorney general and the DOJ, and that needs to be looked at, but I don't think it requires a suit.
Davies says if elected, he would run county government from a business point of view.
And that looking at the financing and the priorities and budgeting, we don't need to budget something just because we did the year before. We need to look at long-range planning and look at what the citizens want and need.
Davies is running against Michelle Landquist and Nicole Rowley in the Democratic primary for Missoula County Commissioner.
Issues like rape, abortion, and violence against women are showing up in Montana's congressional campaign ads as candidates try to appeal to women voters. Nancy Keene is the former head of NARAL Pro-Choice America, a former state school and superintendent, former lawmaker, and longtime Democratic activist. She says women voters will sway the outcome in several key races.
Women's vote made the difference in the Senator Tester race. It's going to make the difference in this congressional race and this U.S. Senate race again this year.
Keenan says she doesn't know if Hillary Clinton will run again for president in 2016, but thinks if she does, she'll have a good chance of winning.
I think she's well-respected in the country. I think women are ready to elect a woman president in this country. So I think when you talk about turnout, I think women in droves will be part of that if she does run in 16.
Keenan ran for the U.S. House in 2000 and lost to former Congressman Denny Reberg.
U.S. Highway 287 from Helena to its intersection with U.S. Highway 191 north of West Yellowstone has been dedicated as the state's Pow Mia Memorial Highway. Black flags honoring the 55 Montanans still classified as prisoners of war or missing in action were attached to light poles on the eastern edge of Helena before Friday's dedication ceremony. Vietnam veteran Dick Juvik and his wife Linda came up with the idea of a memorial highway after participating in the Run for the Wall, a motorcycle trek to Washington, D.C. in 2012. The Independent Record reports the Juviks wrote a letter to state officials requesting the dedication, which was approved in October 2013. Last April, Governor Steve Bullock ordered a Paumia flag to be flown at the state capitol until all 55 missing Montanans are accounted for.
A year ago this month, the Environmental Protection Agency recommended a comprehensive Superfund cleanup for the 3,200-acre industrial site that housed the former Smurfit Stone Pulp and Paper Mill. The former mill sits 11 miles northwest of Missoula and operated from 1957 to early 2010. Toxic byproducts were created during the manufacturing process, some of which still contaminate the site, which is now owned by M2 Green. Montana Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks issued a do-not-eat advisory last year for northern pike and a four-meal-per-month limit on rainbow trout. Talk of that potential Superfund site designated has been fairly subdued over the past year. A public briefing today presented by the Clark Fork Coalition advances the story on a couple of different issues. The coalition was founded in 1985 to protect and restore the Clark Fork watershed. In this evening's feature interview, Edward O'Brien talks with the latest developments with CFC Executive Director Karen Knutson, Science Director Chris Brick, and Missoula County Water Quality District Supervisor Peter Nelson. Nelson says the public commented on the proposal last summer.
In that public comment process, they also received comments from Rock 10 Company and from M2 Green Redevelopment, who are the owners of record at the mill site. And those comments strenuously opposed the listing and provided a lot of technical challenges to the sampling data. So EPA is still evaluating those comments and trying to respond. But in the meantime, EPA is not constrained from proceeding to approach the parties that are former owners and operators of the mill site and initiate what is known as the remedial investigation, the study that defines the limits of contamination in soils and groundwater, in the river, in the fish. And EPA intends to do that, and intends to do that this summer. And that can be done even before a final Superfund listing. And in fact, it may be surprising to most people, but EPA can go through, once they've proposed a site for listing, they can go through their whole Superfund process without final listing and get to the end and even implement a remedy at a site, as long as it's paid for by the responsible parties. The only thing they can't do is spend federal dollars.
No federal dollars are involved at all, even during this remedial investigation?
No, none other than, you know, staff time for employees, and the initial investigation was done with federal dollars, and EPA would seek to have that recompensed in the end.
Chris Brick, what do we know about the level, the extent of pollution at this former mill site? It sounds kind of amorphous.
Well, we know for certain that dioxins and furans have been found in the sludge ponds on the site, and they've also been found in groundwater. And then to sort of complete the linkage towards the Clark Fork River, we also know that they've been found in the river sediments themselves, and they've been found now as well in fish. And so there is basically a chain from the sludge pond to groundwater to river sediments to fish. Groundwater also has significant arsenic contamination as well as cadmium, lead, manganese, and as I mentioned earlier, the dioxins and furans.
Okay, so letters have been sent out to all previous owners.
Yeah, they sent a general notice letter to anybody who ever owned anything at the mill. And then they'll follow up that with what are called special notice letters to probably two or three of the previous owners that they consider most responsible and most able to pay. Included with those special notice letters, as EPA will send these letters to these parties and include a model or an agreement, administrative order on consent, and a model work plan for remedial investigation, and that's intended to initiate the negotiations to come to agreement to complete the remedial investigation. And if that's unsuccessful, EPA does have the authority to order it to be done.
We're also here, Ms. Brink, to talk a little bit about water discharge permits. What do these permits do?
Well, if any entity wants to discharge some pollutant to a river, they need a wastewater discharge permit. So the former pulp and paper mill had such a permit. for industrial wastewater. They discharged to the river directly during some times of years and to retaining ponds during other times of years. So that permit was transferred to M2 Green when M2 Green bought that site.
How much was allowed at that time?
You know, their discharge limits actually changed over the years, and they became a little more stringent over the years. But by the time the mill closed, they were allowed to discharge 66 pounds per day of nitrogen and 51 pounds per day of phosphorus to the river.
And that has been now renewed.
It has, yeah. Even though there is no longer a mill existing, and even though most of the infrastructure there has been demolished or sold, and even though it can no longer be a pulp or paper mill because of a non-competition clause in the sales agreement, they still were given that same waste load allocation by the Department of Environmental Quality.
Again, there's nothing out there. It's an industrial kind of wasteland right now. How does that happen?
We believe it's an error in the way that DEQ was interpreting the rules. We believe that instead of transferring the permit, they should have canceled it. Instead of issuing a renewed permit to sort of a hypothetical plant, they should have canceled it. And, of course, we don't believe that they should have transferred that waste load allocation.
Does it matter if it's just industrial activity taking place out there? Would that apply to a residential development, I guess?
You know, potentially it could, although I think the proper course of action would be to terminate the current industrial wastewater discharge permit. And if somebody needed or wanted to discharge to the rivers for some other purpose, they should simply apply for a new permit, and that's possible to do. So rather than renew a permit for something that doesn't exist anymore, a new discharger should be required to have a new permit.
Ultimately, Karen Knudsen, executive director of the Clark Fork Coalition, who cares? It's moot, isn't it?
We consider this a big issue, and we're pretty concerned. We're tracking it. We believe this permit sets bad precedent on a number of fronts, including permitting a facility that is completely hypothetical and allowing nutrient pollution discharge at amounts that the former Smurfit Stone paper mill received. Now, of course, that paper mill, when it was in operation, supplied an array of important economic benefits for decades. But make no mistake, that pulp and paper mill was also one of the largest sources of industrial pollution to the Clark Fork River. So its closure should have prompted DEQ, which is a guardian of our waterways, it should have prompted DEQ to look at this as an opportunity to improve the long-term health of the river. So that's what this appeal of this permit is all about. It's about calling on DEQ to do its job, to do permitting correctly, and to do right by a river that sustains us all.
How does this job, Mr. Nielsen, this issue, this contested permit with the Superfund process, does it clash with it or jibe quite nicely with it?
Well, it tends to clash. And it just, I guess it just doesn't make sense on the face of it to transfer a permit for a paper mill that's being torn down to somebody and then let them renew it as something else. And they keep the old discharge limits and keep the old mixing zone and all the discharge pipes. It just, on the face of it, just doesn't make any sense. The real problem is, over the last 15, 20 years, we've made tremendous strides in the Clark Fork River. There's been a lot of improvements, including in that reach of river down there. It's way cleaner than it was in the 80s when I first started working on it, and I was a whitewater river guide down in the Alberton Gorge and could see it every day. It's way cleaner, and anybody who floats the river knows that. But to issue this permit would allow us to turn the clock back 15, 20 years to the kind of quality that we used to have, and it's just wrong. If they're going to build a new city out there, it should be the way it should be treated to the same standard that this city does, which is pretty darn good, as a matter of fact. City of Missoula is actually really doing a good job of phosphorus and nitrogen removal.
Ms. Knudsen, this is actually how the Clark Fork Coalition started, essentially, is it not?
It's true. So for us, it's deja vu all over again. We've seen discharge permits before that didn't really stack up and didn't look like they were doing right for the river, and that's what we're seeing now. But yeah, back in 1985, DEQ, or rather its equivalent, gave the green light to Champion International to deal with some failing settling ponds by increasing the discharge to the river. And that was, again, it was setting back the clock, as Peter just mentioned. It was setting back to the clock to a different time, a different way of relating to the river. It was time in 1985 to treat the river differently, view it as an asset, a river that sustains us. So there was interest upriver and down from Anaconda and Deer Lodge all the way to the Clark Fork River's terminus in Sandpoint, Idaho, with people showing up for public hearings and calling their elected officials. A lot of outcry, and thus the Clark Fork Coalition was born.
It's deja vu all over. It's also like a bad penny that just keeps coming back.
Karen Knudsen, Peter Nielsen, Chris Brick, thank you all very much. Of the Clark Fork Coalition and Peter as well. Thanks.
The EPA will not list the former Smurfit Stone site on the National Priorities List of federal Superfund sites this spring. Sites are added to that list only twice per year. The earliest the site could potentially be placed on the list would be in the fall.
And now for tonight's forecast. First, a Western Montana weather advisory. Flood conditions have forced additional closures and restrictions at fishing access sites along the Bitterroot and Clark Fork Rivers and in the Blackfoot Valley this week. Bitterroot River access sites impacted from south to north include the campground portion of Hannon Memorial, Darby Bridge, Woodside Bridge, Bell Crossing, Poker Joe, Florence Bridge, and a portion of the Chief Looking Glass Campground. Clark Fork fishing access sites that are closed include Kelly Island and Kona Bridge. In the Blackfoot Valley, officials planned a partial closure on Montana fishing access sites on Montour Creek. The lower camping area and latrine are closed, but the upper campsite is open. And on the North Fork of the Blackfoot, the boat ramp and campground remain closed at Harry Morgan fishing access site, but visitors can park in the upper lot and access the river by foot. Impacted sites are closed as signed. Additional FAS closures and restrictions around western Montana are possible as spring runoff continues, and Fish, Wildlife, and Parks urges caution if venturing on or near rivers during high water. For updates, you can visit fwp.mt.gov and choose restrictions and closures. And now for the rest of the forecast. West of the Divide tonight, it's mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms and lows in the upper 30s to mid-40s. Wednesday looks to continue the trend with scattered showers and thunderstorms. High should be in the mid-60s to lower 70s. In central Montana, tonight it calls for scattered rain showers in the evening and isolated thunderstorms through the night. More rain showers are likely after midnight, lows 45 to 55. Wednesday, you can expect mostly cloudy skies with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. That may include damaging winds along with large hail and heavy rainfall. High should be 70 to 80 degrees. In southwest Montana, tonight it's partly cloudy. Expect scattered rain showers in the evening and isolated thunderstorms through the night and isolated rain showers after midnight. Low should be around 40 to 45 degrees. Wednesday should be partly cloudy with a slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon and highs 70 to 80 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Susan Hay.
The time of year for commencement speeches. You know, that onerous tradition of making graduates suffer through a speech before handing them their diplomas. Few commencement speeches are memorable. My high school one was, because the speaker was the actress Margaret Hamilton, the Wicked Witch in The Wizard of Oz. Nobody really listened to the speech. We were all just waiting for her to say, "I'll get you, my pretty," which, of course, she did. At my brother's college graduation, the distinguished stateswoman Barbara Jordan spoke. She was brilliant, but the speech went on so long I swear I could have completed grad school during it. Commencement addresses usually involve giving advice. Some theoretically accomplished person drones on, dispensing wisdom, while the poor graduates sweat in those hot polyester gowns and their moms worry about whether there will be enough food at the after party. So, to save us all time, here's my 5-minute commencement speech for today's high school and college graduates, everything they need to know from A to Z. P.S. Most of this I learned the hard way, and I'm also not that good at following my own advice, but here goes. A is for attitude and appreciation. Be positive. What you fear, you attract. What you want, you can achieve. Appreciate everyone. Be as nice to the people who can do nothing for you as you are to the people who can help you. B, believe. Believe in yourself, your work, your community, your ability to make a difference. C, care for the people around you, your community, your cause, yourself. Try to do something every day that brings you happiness, even joy. Spend as little time as possible with the people who bring you down. D, be decisive. Learn to sharpen, trust, and follow your instincts, and then act on them. Don't make a career out of trying to decide. Decide. E, excellence. Strive for it in everything you do. Don't cut corners. Never settle for less than your best effort, even if you're the only one who gives a damn. F, follow up. Do what you say you'll do. G, be gentle with yourself and others. H is for humor and humility. Do serious work, but don't take yourself too seriously. And stay humble. Don't believe your own press releases or that braggy bio you wrote yourself. And part of being humble is not worrying about who gets the credit. There is no end to what you can accomplish if you don't worry about getting credit. And don't keep score, as in, I did this for them and they didn't reciprocate. Help people anyway. I is for integrity. Practice it in all things, personal and professional. J, judgment. Use good judgment, but don't be judgmental. Nobody likes that. K, kind. Lead with kindness. Be candid, but be kind. L is for love. Love people. Yes, you'll be disappointed, and you'll even get your heart broken along the way, but love people anyway. M, mirror. Look in the mirror. Be self-reflective. When you get crosswise with somebody, try to figure out first your own role in the dysfunction. N is for network. Get out there. Join a service organization, a faith organization, a book club, something. O, be open to new ideas, new approaches, new people. They'll expand your horizons. P, principles. Have them. Stick to them. Sometimes you have to let people know what you stand for and also what you won't. Just don't be a self-righteous jerk in doing so. Q, quality. It's critical. Never sacrifice quality for collegiality. Don't go along to get along. R, results. Be results-oriented. Working effectively is just as important as working hard. Get stuff done. S is for screw-ups. They happen. They're opportunities to learn and improve. That's a smarmy cliche, but it's true. Look for what you can learn from screw-ups, but don't hold on to failures. Move on. T, time. It flies. Use it well. Don't look back and regret at things you didn't do. Get out there and do them. T is also for travel. Get out there. U, understand. Be understanding of others. U is also for unflappable. Strive to be that. Keep the drama on the stage. V, volunteer. Find a cause you care about and find a way to help it advance. W, look out the window. Don't be so focused on your own world that you fail to take the pulse of the world outside. X is for exercise. Exercise your body and your mind. Find something you like to do and do it. Fill out X-word puzzles. Go X-country skiing. Y, be young at heart. Surround yourself with people younger than yourself. Appreciate and learn from them. Never miss a chance to help a younger person up the ladder. Z, Z's, get some sleep. It's amazing how much better things look after a good night's sleep. Hoping that these commencement ABCs didn't put you to sleep, I'm Susan Haypatrick, CEO of United Way of Missoula County. Thanks for listening.
Susan Hay is one of several commentators of Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Corin Cates Carney.
And I'm Conrad Scheid. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.